Chapter 14. They lay in the grass, side by side, and the dew had soaked through the backs of their tunics. The night was still and silent. No clouds above, and the fat stars were very bright. Ahead of them, the silver smear of the Milky Way threw the silhouette of the Tugela Heights in bold relief, gave it an aspect of brooding menace. Saul yawned loudly, and immediately Sean was forced to do the same. Though they had not slept that night, it was not the weariness but the symptom of nerves wound tight at the prospect of going in against the Boer guns.
"Another hour and a half until dawn," Saul whispered,
and Sean grunted. There was no profit in counting the hours. At 6:47 the sun would rise, and from behind them the British army would move forward across the brown grass plain. Once more Sean rose to his knees and swept the ground before them with his eyes, letting them move slowly along the bank of the Tugela, picking up the loom of the steel road bridge 100 paces ahead of them, accounting for each bush on this bank that they had not multiplied or moved. Then, satisfied, he sank down again.
"My God, it's cold."
He could feel Saul shivering beside him.
"It'll warm up quite soon,"
Sean grinned in the darkness as he answered. The clear night sky had allowed yesterday's warmth to escape. The grass and their clothing were wet. Even the steel of the rifles was painfully cold to the touch. But Sean had long ago learned to ignore physical discomfort. He could, when necessary, lie completely motionless while tsetse flies settled on his neck and sank their red-hot needles into the soft skin behind his ears. Nevertheless, it was a relief when the false dawn showed, and it was time to move.
"I'll go in now," he whispered. "Good luck. I'll have breakfast ready when you come back."
This was a job for one man, a job that Sean did not relish. They had made certain that there were no enemy on this side of the river. Now, at the last minute, when it was too late for the Boers to alter their dispositions, someone had to cross and find out in what strength they were holding the bridge. A couple of Boer Maxims sighted to command the bridge at short range, or even demolition charges set ready to blow, would mean that the chances of success, instead of being slim, would be non-existent. Sean slung his rifle across his back and began crawling forward through the grass. Twice he stopped to listen briefly. But there was little time. True dawn in an hour. He reached the bridge and lay in its heavy shadow, staring across at the far bank. Nothing moved. In the starlight the kopjes loomed like the backs of dark whales in the grassy sea. He waited 5 minutes, long enough for a restless sentry to fidget. Still nothing.
"Here we go," he whispered aloud.
And suddenly he was afraid. For an instant he did not recognize the sensation, for he had experienced it only 3 or 4 times in his life, but never with so little cause. He crouched beside the steel girders of the bridge, with the weakness in his legs and his belly full of the oiliness. It was only when he caught the taste of it at the back of his throat, a taste a little like that of fish oil mixed with the effluence of something long dead, that he knew what it was.
"I'm afraid."
His first reaction was of surprise, which changed quickly to alarm. This was how it happened. He knew it happened to other men. He had heard them talk of it around the campfires, remembered the words and the pity underlying them.
"Yah, this gun boy led him back to camp. He was shaking like a man with a fever, and he was crying. I thought he was hurt. Daniel," I said. "Daniel, what's wrong?"
"It broke," he said, with the tears running into his beard.
"It broke there in my head. I heard it break. I threw the gun away and I ran."
"Did he charge Daniel?" I asked.
"No, man, I didn't even see him. Just heard him feeding close by in the catbush. Then it broke in my head and I was running."
"He was no coward. I had hunted with him many times, seen him kill an elephant from a charge so that it fell close enough to touch with the gun barrel. He was good, but he had lived too close to it. Then suddenly it broke in his head. He hasn't hunted since." I have accumulated fear the way an old ship collects barnacles and weed below the waterline. Now it is ready to break in me also, Sean knew. Knew also that if he ran now, as the old hunter had run, he would never hunt again. Crouching in the darkness, sweating in the cold of dawn with the iciness of his fear, Sean wanted to vomit. He was physically sick, breathing heavily through his open mouth,
the warm oiliness in his belly coming close to venting itself, so weak with it that his legs began to tremble, and he caught at one of the iron girders of the bridge for support. A minute that seemed like all eternity he stood like that. Then he began to fight it, bearing down on it, stiffening his legs and forcing them to move forward. Consciously he checked the relaxation of his sphincter muscle. That close he had come to the ultimate degradation. He knew then that the old joke about cowards was true, and that it applied to him also. He went up onto the bridge, picking up each foot deliberately, swinging it forward, laying it down, and moving the weight of his body over it. His breathing was deliberate, each breath taken and expelled at the command of his brain. He couldn't trust his body now to perform even the simplest task, not after it had betrayed him so monstrously. Had they been waiting at the bridge, the Boers would have killed him that morning. Without caution, he paced slowly down the centre of it, big and heavily moving in the starlight, and his footsteps rang on the metal. Under his feet, the metal gave way to gravel. He was across. He kept walking, down the middle of the road, following the gentle curve towards the dark hills. He walked on with his terror, and the sound of it roared in his head like the sound of the sea. The sling of his rifle slipped from his shoulder, and the weapon clattered into the road. He stood for a full minute before he could gather himself to stoop and pick it up. Then he turned and went back, pacing slowly, counting his footsteps, measuring them out, one each second, timing them carefully to prevent himself from running, because if he ran, he knew it was finished. He, too, would never hunt again.
"You're right," Saul was waiting.
"Yes."
Sean sank down beside him.
"See anything?"
"No."
Saul was staring at him.
"Are you sure you're all right?"
Sean sighed.
Once before he had been afraid. Fear had come to him in a caved-in mineshaft. Later he had gone back and left his fear in the same mineshaft and had walked away from it alone, in the same way he had hoped to leave it now beyond the river. But this time it had followed him back. With a certainty he knew that it would never leave him from now onwards. It would always be near. "I will have to tame it," he thought. "I will have to break it to the halter and the curb."
"Yes, yeah, I am all right," he answered Saul. "What's the time?"
"5:30.
"I'll send Imbijani back now."
Sean stood up and went to where Imbijani waited with their horses. He handed Imbijani the small square of green cloth, which was the prearranged signal that neither the bridge nor the town was defended in force. The red square he replaced in his breast pocket.
"I will come back," Imbijani told him.
"No,"
Sean shook his head.
"There is nothing for you here."
Bijani untied the horses.
"Stay in peace.
Go in peace."
Sean was thankful that Bijani would not be there as witness, should he break under his newfound fear.
"But I must not break," he decided grimly.
"Today will be the test. If I can last out this day, then perhaps I will have tamed it." He went back to where Saul waited in the darkness, and together they lay and watched the dawn come on.